From NPR News, this is All Things Considered. I'm Michelle Norris.
And I'm Alyssa Block. We've all heard stories about near-death experiences. The tunnel, the white light, the encounter with long-dead relatives looking very much alive. Scientists have cast a skeptical eye on those accounts, but now some researchers are taking a close neurological look at near-death experiences. All week, we've been reporting on the emerging science of spirituality. Finally today, NPR's Barbara Bradley Haggerty asks, can your mind still operate when your brain has shut down?
I met Pam Reynolds in her tour bus. She's a big deal in the music world. Her company, Southern Tracks, has recorded music by everyone from Springsteen to Pearl Jam to R.E.M. But you've probably never heard her favorite song.
So my kin.
Reynolds wrote this song about the time she traveled to death's door and back. The experience has made her, well, a rock star in the near-death world. Reynolds' journey began one hot August day in 1991.
I was in Virginia Beach, Virginia, with my husband. We were promoting a new record, and I inexplicably forgot how to talk. I've got a big mouth. I never forget how to talk.
An MRI revealed an aneurysm on her brainstem. It was already leaking, a ticking time bomb. Her doctor said her best hope was a young brain surgeon in Arizona named Robert Spetzler.
The aneurysm was very large, and it was in a location where the only way to really give her the very best odds of fixing it required what we call cardiac standstill.
It was a daring operation, chilling her body, draining the blood out of her head like oil from a car engine, snipping the aneurysm, and then bringing her back from the edge of death.
She is as deeply comatose as you can possibly be and still be alive.
When the operation began, the surgeons taped shut her eyes and put molded speakers in her ears that made clicking sounds as loud as a jet plane going off. These ear speakers allowed the surgeons to measure her brain activity and let them know when they could drain her blood.
And I was lying there on the gurney minding my own business, seriously unconscious, when I started to hear a noise. It was natural D. And as the sound continued, I don't know how to explain this other than go ahead and say it, I popped out of the top of my head.
She found herself looking down at the operating table. She says she could see 20 people and hear what sounded like a dentist drill. She looked at the instrument in the surgeon's hand.
But it was an odd-looking thing. It looked like the handle on my electric toothbrush.
Reynolds observed the bone saw they used to cut open her head, the drill bits in the case, which looked like the one where her father kept his socket wrenches. Then she noticed a surgeon at her left groin.
I heard a female voice say, her arteries are too small. And Dr. Spetzler, I think it was him, said, use the other side.
Soon after, the surgeons began to lower her body temperature to 60 degrees. It was about that time that Reynolds believes she noticed a tunnel and a bright light. She eventually flatlined completely, and the surgeons drained the blood out of her head. During her near-death experience, she says she chatted with her dead grandmother and uncle, who escorted her back to the operating table. She says as they looked down on her body, she could hear the Eagles song, Hotel California, playing in the OR as the doctors restarted her heart.
The line was, you can check out any time you like, but you can never leave. And I opened my eyes, and I said, you know, that is really insensitive.
Afterwards, Reynolds assumed she had been hallucinating. But a year later, she mentioned the details to her neurosurgeon. Dr. Spetzler says her account matched his memory.
From a scientific perspective, I have absolutely no explanation of how it could have happened.
Spetzler didn't check out all the details, but Michael Sabom did. He's a cardiologist in Atlanta who is researching near-death experiences.
With Pam's permission, they sent me her records from the surgery, and long story short, what she said happened to her is actually what Spetzler did with her out there in Arizona.
According to the records, there were 20 doctors in the room. There was a conversation about the veins in her left leg. She was defibrillated twice. They were playing Hotel California. How about that bone saw? Sabom got a photo from the manufacturer. It does look like an electric toothbrush. Sabom asks, how could she know these things?
Even if she was wide awake, she could not have heard because of what they did to her ears. In addition, both of her eyes were taped shut, so she couldn't open her eyes and see what was going on. So her physical sensory perception was off the table.
That is preposterous, says anesthesiologist Gerald Worley.
This report provides absolutely no evidence for survival of any sort of consciousness outside the body during near-death experiences or any other such experiences.
Worley is an Australian researcher and near-death experience debunker who has investigated Reynolds' case. He believes she was conscious and could hear everything in the room, despite the clicking earplugs.
There are various explanations. One is that the earphones or plugs were not that tightly fitting. Two, it could have been that it was due to sound transmission through the operating table itself.
As for seeing the bone saw, Worley says, she recognized a sound from her childhood.
So she made a picture in her mind of a machine or a device which was very similar to what she was familiar with, a dental drill.
Worley says Reynolds experienced anesthesia awareness when a person is conscious but can't move. Now, that doesn't convince Sebaum or Dr. Spetzler. They believe the combination of anesthesia and the sluggish brain activity caused by hypothermia meant that Reynolds could not form or retain memories for a significant part of the operation. At the very least, Sebaum says, Pam Reynolds' story raises the possibility that consciousness can function even when the brain is offline.
Is there some type of awareness that occurs with a non-functional physical brain? And if there is, then does that mean that there's a soul or a spirit?
But in the end, her story is just an anecdote. And in fact, that's the problem with all the studies of near-death experiences. After all, you can't do clinical trials where you kill Mrs. Smith, tag along as she passes through the tunnel to the light, just to verify her story. Except in Hollywood, of course.
Don't do any more. I did not come to medical school to murder my classmates, no matter how deranged they might be.
In the movie Flatliners, five medical students try to peer into the next world by stopping their hearts and returning to tell the tale. The movie inspired Mario Beauregard, a neuroscientist at the University of Montreal. What if he could do the next best thing? Since stopping people's hearts is a research no-no, he's asking people who have had near-death experiences to relive them while he looks to see what's happening in their head.
It seems that these people have a different kind of brain.
Beauregard recruited 15 people who had a near-death experience. One of those was Gilles Bedard, who says he saw, quote, 12 beings of light when he nearly died in 1973.
And I felt it was like, I would say, the breath of the universe. And because it was like, very, very peaceful.
Since then, Bedard has meditated every day and says he often reconnects with the light. The research question is, how will his brain respond when he does?
We have 32 electrodes.
For the experiment, Bedard is shut into an isolation chamber at Beauregard's Montreal lab. Bedard's head sprouts 32 electrodes, which will record his brainwave activity when he's in his spiritual state. He's told to relax, then imagine his near-death experience. A few minutes later, Beauregard and his research assistant are peering at a computer screen recording Bedard's brainwaves.
No, look at this. Yeah. Oh, really good example. Look at this.
The slow delta waves undulating across the screen are typical of a person in deep meditation. Afterwards, the researcher asks Bedard if he was able to reconnect with the light.
Yeah, it wasn't coming from within.
It would take Beauregard a year to complete his research on near-death experiences, or NDEs. A few weeks ago, I called to ask what he had found out.
So it's like the NDE triggered something at a neural level in the brain. And perhaps this change in terms of brain activity is sort of permanent.
Beauregard says it's as if touching death jump-started the spiritual lives of these people. They're a lot like Catholic nuns and Buddhist monks who have spent tens of thousands of hours in prayer and meditation, he says. Both groups showed extremely slow brainwave activity. They also saw significant changes in brain regions associated with positive emotions, attention, and personal boundaries as the people lost their sense of their physical bodies and merged with God or the light. Can't anyone do that, I ask?
Oh, no. It's not possible to do this.
Skeptic Gerald Worley says there is nothing remarkable and certainly not spiritual about these findings.
The brain function of many of these people who have undergone near-death experiences is altered, extreme oxygen starvation does change brain function because it causes damage to the larger cells in the brain.
It is brain chemistry, he says, not a trip to heaven.